Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I have the exciting part two episode with Chemtrails author Ilana Freeland. Now today we're going to get a special preview of Ilana's new book, Under an Ionized Sky, From Chemtrails to Space Fence Lockdown, which is set for release in February 2018 and looks like a real game changer on these controversial subjects. Now in part one we looked at the early setup for the Space Fence, including HARP technology and the early development of the SDI Star Wars program in the Reagan-Bush era. In this special episode, we'll look at the links between CERN, D-Wave, AI, and space fence surveillance. Are we living under an ionized sky? Let's go ask Ilana Freeland.
As the HARP experiments proved, we have now opened up Pandora's box. You want to know what it's like to live under an electrified atmosphere? This is it. Okay, right now.
The Dark Journalist Special Report. CERN, D-Wave, AI, and Space Fence Lockdown. Featuring an in-depth two-part interview with Chemtrails HARP expert, Ilana Freeland. Now, let's go join Dark Journalist Daniel List.
Ilana, it's great to have you back for part two of our deep discussion on the space fence. Now, I know we covered a lot in part one, and what I'd like to do as we start off here is to have you discuss the connections between these fascinating areas that you cover. So, for example, if we take HARP technology, ionizing the atmosphere, chemtrails, the space fence, this D-Wave quantum computing chip, and CERN. Now, an average person may have heard a little bit about chemtrails or HARP. If someone's really interested, there's good information on CERN that's available out there through somebody like Patch or some of the interviews that I've done with Dr. Joseph Farrell. Of course, the space fence is something you're bringing forward and really bringing out a lot of that D-Wave computing research as well. Now, these research areas are all connected in your research. So my question is, what is the core relationship between all of them?
They are all to recreate the Earth, not as a natural being, but as a machine.
Uh-huh.
It's entirely about that. The love affair these so-called scientists have with the machine is preempting what in the future we would have been doing anyway, but with much more development as human beings.
Right.
I mean, we love nature. I mean, when I think of the millions of acres of trees that are basically dying in California, rain or no rain, because in the precipitate coming down, remember, it's loaded with aluminum. And it's the aluminum that's killing the soil and the trees. So rain really is not our savior anymore. This is so sad.
Yeah.
And people need to understand this. So they want a simulacrum for the Earth. They don't want the old nature. So they're bringing in the simulacrum through making the entire planet a surveilled, wireless nervous system that we are entirely encompassed by, right down to our DNA.
That's very interesting. And I've heard you mention before that some of what the space fence setup will be able to accomplish will be surveillance down to the DNA level. Now, can you get into that here? And how exactly would that work?
To get to the DNA level, they would need a certain pulse, a certain frequency. But there's nothing in this body that cannot be contacted and communicated with the right frequency. And we are, as the HARP experiments proved, and Clifford Carnicom points out, we are resonant beings. And it is that resonance that is set in motion by pulsing frequencies, our body will resonate to that. We can't say, body, don't do that.
Hmm.
It's just the nature of sound, infrasound, ultrasound. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, you know, that sort of thing. Sound is what makes us or breaks us. And they are heading toward turning us too into simulacra.
Huh.
In this giant, it's so the opposite of what Tesla wanted. But they have taken Tesla and inverted his best into this huge machine that we are to live in and be in what they call the hive mind. So that's how I see them connect.
That's it. Yeah.
It's kind of sad, but do you remember reading, I don't know if you did, Daniel, but C.S. Lewis wrote a trilogy, a science fiction trilogy. And I still remember the book, I think it was the first one, Out of This Silent Planet.
Hmm.
And think about
it. I've read C.S. Lewis, but not that one.
Yes, they are well worth reading, especially that one right now. Because along with turning our planet into a machine, do you realize this is going to cut us off from the stars?
Hmm.
This is going to cut us off from, you know, it's the atmosphere right now is ionized, plasmaized, electrified. So this is what it's like. You want to know what it's like to live under an electrified atmosphere? This is it. Okay, right now, whether it's a clear day or a cloudy day, doesn't matter. This is it. Now, imagine that it's all encased and that through this electrified atmosphere, anyone can be accessed at any level. That's what surveillance means. And I think Edward Snowden had a whiff of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish he had spoken of it, but he didn't. Instead, he just said what I'd already known for over 10 years about surveillance being absolute.
Yes, exactly.
But surveillance means much more than listening in on our phone conversations and our emails. It actually means 24/7 full spectrum dominance access to anyone, anywhere, anytime. That's what it means to me.
Well, that is a daunting reality. And honestly, I don't think it's an easy matter for someone to comprehend, at least as far as the vast scale of it goes. But it seems to me that you've dealt with the implications yourself, and you really share that in your work. So I guess a personal question here is, why is it such a passion for you? What would you like to see people do with this information?
I'm doing my best to present the picture because I believe that consciousness, if you're ignorant and things are happening to you and around you, that can be very depressing because we are knowledge beings. That's what human beings are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Poor education system or not. So by spelling it out, I'm hoping that people will take that up and find the strength to live in what are otherwise are extraordinarily exciting times. I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better war to fight.
All right.
If I had been aware before I came in into this planet. So I'm positive because I will not stop fighting, whether I'm here or after I'm dead. It doesn't matter to me. It's all kind of one to me. So I'm hoping that people will take it up and take it further and bring the knowledge to people who, instead of judging them as being know-nothings and dopes and things, which I kind of do with my own town sometimes. I get a little frustrated. but that, you know, bring the knowledge and then you can lead the horse to water and you can't make him drink, etc. But that at least from my vantage point on my watch, I'm doing what I can for this situation in bringing something entirely too soon for us to be able to make good with our machines.
That's very interesting. And I really appreciate that you don't so much push your views as much as provide information that people can discover around these topics that are really shrouded in secrecy. But if you had to answer this question, you know, how dangerous is it for an individual to remain just completely oblivious about these changes in our environment that you're documenting here? You know, how high are the stakes for them as an individual to remain kind of blissfully unaware?
For this life?
Yes.
Their health? Their children's health? I mean, the hive mind is almost here, isn't it, Daniel?
Yes.
I mean, people know their TV shows better than they know anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's already working. And you know, that's after, what, 50, 60, 70 years of TV now?
Right.
So I mean, what I think of is for the future evolution of humanity, it just slows us down. And as far as the planet being destroyed and then we're destroyed, or we're destroyed and the planet can, you know, some humanists think that without us, the planet would survive and thrive. Well, I tend to think of us as being absolutely interconnected to this planet. I mean, we come here to learn. We leave, we come back to learn, we leave, we come back to learn. We are connected, interconnected with this beloved planet. And I know it could recover from a lot. But if we're sent, if we human beings are sent in a separate direction from our mandate of being the religion of the gods, the free will being, and we instead become just cells in a hive mind for a slavery system under corporate feudalism. And who knows who those corporate guys are and what lives in them and their D-Wave computers. Then that's another story. And I don't believe that the Earth would survive without us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, what is us then? What will us be?
Well, you make an excellent point that we're actually fortunate right now to have the ability to look at these things they're setting up, like the space fence, for example, and get really informed on it, to understand this new reality that we're living in. But being on the leading edge of this kind of explosive research, I can imagine, must also be challenging for you in a way. It's a kind of responsibility. How do you see your own role in all of this?
I only know that I'm going to honor my watch with my gifts. And then I hope that anyone who hears me realizes they can honor their watch with their gifts. And they'll have to decide what that means. They might not spend their entire life at their keyboard, talking to people half a world away and, you know, and this and that, but they will do what they do. And I have confidence in that. It's people who are on the ride down the slope of TV and sort of nothingness that I am concerned about.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's always been just a few who lead most of humanity, it seems to me, lead them forward. There's always been just a few. I used to read all their biographies when I was very young, to find out how I should live. I'd read the biographies of the great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the humanity I'm serving.
Well, it's an excellent point. And I think anyone looking at modern culture would say it's in great need of a kind of deeper insight and awareness. You know, there's so much going on now that's just about getting sold on the latest gadget or car or something to aspire to along that line. And this reminds me of a conversation I had with Russell Targ, the physicist from SRI that started the remote viewing program for the Pentagon and CIA. And of course, you know, they denied for years that they had these programs, but it came out and it gave us all a much better idea of what they were up to. And, you know, we never got too many details. But one of the things that Targ said about these military intel types was that they took a great interest in the subject from a variety of angles.
Yes.
And they were really pleased that the public didn't know very much about these types of topics. You know, that lack of curiosity really served them and the kind of secrecy that they were trying to build.
Oh, wow.
That was just what they wanted. Now, some smaller aspects were eventually declassified, like remote viewing. That really is just the tip of the kind of interest in these programs that they have on a black budget level. So, you know, we have to understand they have deep, deep interest in subjects like psychic phenomena or UFOs or occult networks and things around the paranormal, because they certainly understand the strategic value of these things. And we really need to get on their level of understanding in order to get a full picture of what's really going on with things like CERN or the space fence. You know, we have to think on their level if we're going to be able to counteract the kind of propaganda that's going to come out of that.
Well, and it's difficult, isn't it? Because that ever since the 60s, and I could even go back to the burned out districts of New England, when the Freemasons decided that they would reveal the reality of the realm of the dead.
Uh-huh.
And they did that through table tapping, channeling sessions, and ectoplasm that, as you know, Sir William Crookes, father of chemistry, was involved in. And by the way, that ectoplasm, I think, is plasma. And I'm not sure how that happened in those sessions. I'm assuming there would have been some sort of radio frequency or something going on in the environment that was not included in the subtitle to the pictures.
That is fascinating, though. And those pictures are so verifiable.
They are.
Yeah, and the whole, you know, the witnesses and everything, it's a very interesting phenomena.
Well, and Crookes was a very high degree Freemason. And that's where this whole thing about the military, it seems to me, I certainly talk about it in Sub Rosa America, that the high degree military and intelligence agents are very much occultists, very high degree occultists. They probably begin with Freemasonry and may even, because Satanism is so prevalent now in the military, they may even go into OTO and Church of Satan with General Michael Aquino. So there is a high level of military, again, compartmentalized, who very, very much know about the occult. And in my opinion, they all read Rudolf Steiner, because he was one of the first, and it was certainly why Ledbetter and Annie Besant basically chucked him out, was because he felt that it was time to draw people in and reveal what's really going on. I mean, he did have certain caveat areas that he did not cover that I believe are still sitting in the libraries of the Goetheanum, and you have to have first-class status in order to get into them. But anyway, so I absolutely agree with Russell Targ, if that's what he indicated, that there is a level they know. And then the minions, they don't have to know. They just do what they're told in the various compartmentalized areas without knowing the whole picture. But that's how it always is. Same thing with global elites, same thing with Council on Foreign Relations, same thing. You know, there are always going to be initiates of some degree involved in any major social institutions that have power over the people's consciousness. It's just how it is. It's not even, you know, worth argument.
Right, right, exactly. And it's interesting you mentioned the Masons there, because there are those researchers who closely track their influence on the space program and the first moon missions. So they have some serious involvement with space and place a heavy emphasis on it in their own mythology.
Yes. In my opinion, and I make it clear in Sub Rosa, they are... the Freemasons are still in charge. They're the primary brotherhood here in America and UK. And here in America, I would also add the Knights of Malta I just look at the configuration of CIA agents, and they are in three groups. Mostly they are there are Freemasons because they can belong to multiple lodges. There's, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't matter if you're a Freemason and a Knight of Malta, no problem, and a Catholic that goes to service on Sundays or a Presbyterian or whatever. And then the third group that I would have to name would be the Mormons.
Okay.
Because they're highly esoteric, and they are actually a Freemason further group. They go further into degrees of initiation than the 33 degrees. And the OTO goes up to 96 degrees, last I checked. So you know, occultism is doing well. It's just that it's hidden behind a lot of tissues and veils.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's a way to keep control over civilization, because knowledge is power, scientia est potentia. You know, that's their motto, their decree. They are still the inner brotherhoods, keeping humanity at the level that it needs to be at for the gods. And then there are the rebels, who are the ones who are heading toward transhumanism and taking the age that Steiner said we could not do without, that we would eventually have to come to, the age of the machine, and that his hope was that we could do it in such a way as John Worrell Keeley did in Philadelphia back in the late 19th century, which is to, by our moral development, control our relationship with machines, that some machines would not operate with anyone but us. Other machines would not operate with anyone that did not have the moral development that we have. And other machines would obey the very immoral development of humans in rebellion. So, you know, I see it as the same today. This is where we are.
Absolutely. And I think it's fair to say that Steiner saw it as a battle between these forces for spiritual evolution and the kind of harmonic night side negative entities that are building this kind of malevolent, you know, more dystopian type reality. This is the technological nightmare that's underway. So lots of promise, but lots of danger also, which brings us to artificial intelligence, or AI, and that's really the next step in this war.
They are desperately trying with the AI, like the D-Wave adiabatic quantum computer out of Vancouver, B.C., that is at every major site now, including CERN, that the D-Wave computers that have their own intelligence and their own consciousness development would bring the age of machines quicker, faster, so that we're not really morally ready for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly is true now. No way are we morally ready for
no,
that.
Not by a long shot.
And with John Worrell Keeley, they were able to bury his work so successfully, unlike Tesla's, because Keeley had a little device he wore on his body. And that was how he controlled those fantastic machines that could use an ounce of water to run 3 square blocks of electricity, Daniel.
Wow.
I mean, you know, talk about free energy. But he was the only one that can control it. And they sent agents in, and, you know, agents provocateur to steal it and everything. They couldn't figure it out. So finally, they just put it all away until a future date. And then, you know, he, of course, died. And he and Tesla were not allowed to meet. And, oh, it's quite the story, quite the American story.
That's so fascinating. And he's a really great example of what you're talking about. And we'll do a show on his work and what happened there at some point. Well, we do know that not only did corporate America not want that kind of information getting out, but some of the more secretive brotherhoods or secret societies also play a role there. And one last comment on Steiner is he's really the one who pointed out that these occult brotherhoods are deeply, deeply embedded in our political system.
Well, now we know, don't we?
Now we know.
They are deeply embedded. I would be surprised if even our now sitting president were not a Freemason.
Oh, that's interesting.
I would assume he is. So, you know, whether or not there is justification beyond just wanting power to control information, control knowledge, I look around at the so-called democracy of America that it has become with its second-class, third-class education process and its terrible entertainment industry. And I certainly would not want these people to know quite a few things that are being kept from us.
Well, you make a really great point there, because we shouldn't think of these forces as a monolith, you know, one deep state, one major breakaway civilization. They have factions, and some of them actually believe they have the answers, you know, to do what's right. So let's tie all of this into the space fence for a moment. Would you say then that the space fence is the most invasive apparatus for harvesting human effort, human wealth, and human potential?
Well, the way I look at the space fence, given that our previous discussion in the first half did touch upon my information that I have really eked out of reading and out of Anthony Patch, who is probably, he's the person I know to be pursuing knowledge about CERN from a spiritual vantage point. Anthony is a Christian, and he is very, very good in the science and very clear on the spiritual aspect of CERN. When I was writing the Space Fence book, I know one thing for sure, that CERN is completely calibrated to operate with the space fence. And that whereas the space fence and its HARP experiments in the background are dangerous for the ionosphere, which is the largest body around us. And think of them as etheric bodies. Think of it as astral bodies. These are bodies. These are subtle bodies that are being gouged and experimented on. That as the space fence and HARP and other ionospheric heaters, the entire ionospheric heater network, many of which are mobile now, and on oil rigs and being toted by trucks here and there.
Right.
They have to do with the ionosphere. CERN has to do with the magnetosphere, which is inside the ionosphere. Okay.
Okay.
So the two have their marching orders, basically. And as far as the Higgs boson particle, the God particle, whatever, you know, to me, it's all press. It's all press. Because what they're really doing there, with the help of the D-Wave computer, which is, and we have to get this straight, seems to be self-intelligent.
Huh.
Now, you know, we can talk about ha-ha, the ghost in the machine, but I don't think it's funny. I think that certainly some sort of entity can go into a body the same as it can go into a machine.
Mm-hmm.
No problem. So they have the D-Wave, and the D-Wave appears to be, through the technology there, opening the proverbial portal. But what it's opening it to is very interesting. It's opening it to antimatter. And Anthony Patch is sure about this. And I pursue that in the chapter I have in the Space Fence book that I've entitled The Temple of CERN. And the reason I entitled it The Temple of CERN is not just because of this antimatter ingress that they're attempting. I think the most recent thing I remember in the pre-programming of cinema, of Hollywood cinema, is would be the Dan Brown Angels and Demons, I think it was called, in which the beautiful young female scientist is trying to save the world from antimatter.
Right.
Because the antimatter vial has been stolen and the bad guy has it. And okay, so antimatter, the problem with antimatter, we all have antimatter. It's sort of like a double, sort of like the doppelganger part of us. You know, we're all energy beings. And in this realm, we have matter. We've developed bodies of matter. But in the other realm, that is a psychic realm, or I don't know what to call it.
Maybe etheric would be the correct term for this?
Well, the etheric realm is actually, as I understand it, all of space.
Okay, so what you're talking about is different. And there's dark matter also.
But that's ether.
Okay.
That's the very... And that's why it's interesting, Daniel, when you start reading about plasma, they constantly say that 99% of the universe is plasma.
Incredible.
So you see that plasma and ether are very close. And my guess is ether is sort of, it's not matter, but it's not entirely spiritual, but it is. It is something in between. But plasma is matter. It's just a very fine version of matter. And my guess is that ether can become plasma with a certain electrical impulse, perhaps a gamma ray, perhaps an X-ray, something in space. And it becomes plasma, because that's how they're able to make plasma here, is by having some matter, like the metals and the on a nanoscale, and then zap it, and then they can make plasma. And that's the clouds that we see over our head now. These are all plasma clouds. Some have some moisture in them. But even if you look at the moisture and you collect the moisture that's coming down and really analyze it, you're going to see this is not the same moisture that we used to have. Here in the Northwest, it rains a lot. It's not the same, and it dries super fast. And the snow that comes down. Remember a couple winters ago, people were trying to melt the snow, but all that happened is it would go on fire.
Yes, yes.
Now that's chemical snow. That's chemically nucleated snow. It has a name. So anyway, back to the plasma. And antimatter. The antimatter is the other side of existence from my presence here. So it's like a root. It's like a root in another world that allows me to manifest in this world. I'm sure in the Rig Veda and all the old the Bhagavad Gita or whatever, that they're going to have somebody explaining these fantastic things.
Yes.
That we in the West, you know, completely immersed in materialistic thought, think of as ha-ha. But certainly not military scientists.
Right.
And not plasma scientists and not astrophysicists. You know, they know there are signs and wonders everywhere, and their job is to interpolate them for their peers and keep them hidden from the unwashed masses like us.
And they're doing one hell of a job keeping that stuff off the radar. And I also know that you believe that many UFO sightings are plasma ships and are inhabited by plasma beings from some space, but certainly not the kind of Alpha Centauri model that we always hear about in relation to these off-world civilizations. And so when we come back, we'll look at some of your outside-the-box ideas about projects like CERN being the gateway for these kinds of beings to enter our reality. Very edgy stuff. Final round here of part two, coming up with Alana Freeland. We're going deep into the space vents. Stay with us.
Dark journalist. Go for truth in 2017. The deepest questions, the biggest secrets, the darkest mysteries. Dark Journalist, go for truth. With top guests like Graham Hancock.
Graham, how do we as a society escape the grip of the deep state in the 21st century?
Rather than spending trillions of dollars every year on building up our armies and our weapons of mass destruction and creating a climate of hatred and fear and suspicion, we should be uniting as a human race.
Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, what is the issue that's holding us back and destroying prosperity?
We have a system which has got a negative return on investment. It's killing human productivity, and where it's going is inhuman.
Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, you've been fighting against secrecy your whole life. How are we doing in this battle?
There is a kind of energy and synergy that you and I have because we are both trying so hard in so many facets to get to the bottom of what is the truth.
Dark Journalist, go for truth. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special summer discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll receive exclusive member benefits, including access to the complete high-quality audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, and subscriber-only content, including bonus show material. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist, this is the year. Now is the time.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Join us now and go for truth.
And we are back. This is Dark Journalist, and I'm speaking with Chemtrails author Ilana Freeland. Now, we're getting a special preview here of what promises to be a truly groundbreaking book on the space fence, this intriguing and somewhat ominous project that ostensibly was set up to patrol space junk. But now, in conjunction with HARP technology and an ionized atmosphere, is the perfect vehicle, according to Ilana, for what she calls surveillance down to the DNA level. Her new book is titled Under an Ionized Sky, From Chemtrails to Space Fence Lockdown. It's coming out in February 2018. I call this one to watch, truly a subject whose time has come. Now, Ilana, one thing I'd like to do here is link how something like an ionized sky feeds into some of the experiments we're seeing at CERN, which is this mysterious particle collider in Geneva that's been identified by many good researchers, such as yourself, as having multiple purposes beyond its official mandate to find the Higgs boson, or God particle, responsible for the Big Bang, which we know is a kind of subterfuge being put out there. Now, CERN does pack a $6 billion budget. That's pretty defense level. You don't see too many projects like that with that kind of a budget in the scientific community. So how does it relate to what's happening with this HARP technology?
So there's CERN sending amazing power that it's down here. You know, it's had electron versus electron down in its 26-mile circuit underground, way underground, I might add. Now with this awake device that Anthony Patch is much more of an expert on than I am, you have proton and electron. In fact, I think I was wrong about electron versus electron. I think it was proton versus proton was what they were doing with the collider. But now it is balanced between the proton and electron. So they're attempting to open this gate, and in will pour, I'm imagining, various entities, most of which are not visible. So you will still need very expensive, very elite devices to perceive them. But the real problem is this. Just as I was saying before on as above, so below, what happens up there happens deep in my cells, in my DNA. By changing the arrangement between matter and antimatter, by opening this portal that will suck in from like a vacuum, will suck in this realm, from what I've read, that will happen in us too. And so our lives will be transformed by this new relationship with antimatter. that I'm convinced none of these scientists really know.
Yeah.
What that will mean. And they don't care. That's the thing I really hate about Western science, is it's like, well, let's just do it and see what happens. There's no forethought. And I don't know if you remember the old adage for alchemy, to be an alchemist, a true alchemist, was, you know, two steps in moral development, one step in science. And so there is no moral development expected. Everything is arrogant and hubris beyond belief. And you know, this could very much throw the human evolution of consciousness that I believe in, and that I live for, and that I work for, because I know it's coming. But we have now opened up Pandora's box too early, and the CERN, the reason I called it the temple, and I forgot to clarify that, is because of those strange things that have happened at CERN. One, there was initially a dance of the electrons in with a few people. And, well, that was kind of creative. That was nice. Then next came the...
Well, they performed a mock human sacrifice, which was caught on camera.
So-called mock human sacrifice.
Yes.
Not really sure if it was mock. I don't know. But,
right. We don't know.
But it was definitely broadcast. So there was that. And then the third one, and I think it was in that order, perhaps inverted, is the tunnel that opened 100 or so miles from where CERN is. But I, being the diligent researcher that I am, went and checked its latitude and longitude, and the latitude is identical to that of CERN. And that is how rituals are done, is you have to have the exact latitude and or longitude in order to really make a ritual effective.
This is the Goddard Tunnel you're speaking of.
Goddard Tunnel.
Right.
And the bizarre... rites there. I watched the whole film, some inside the tunnel, and then it graduated to outside the tunnel, where there were extraordinary, morally reprehensible pantomimes done. And all of these elites, I think there were three national leaders. Merkel from Germany refused to come, or somebody was busy or something. So this was obviously some sort of quickening agent on another level, but that most people don't believe in. And so to them, it was just appalling or ridiculous.
Right.
But to me, indicated they're really building up some juice for whatever CERN is engaged in. And certainly Anthony Patch also sees it that way. So that's why I called it the temple, is that I think it possibly is a Vatican or a Mecca for various, what I would call satanic global elites, who definitely have big plans for the future of humanity and even the planet, in a, again, rebellious gesture or more than that, agenda, opposing the legitimate creator or gods, or however anyone wants to look at the good guys that are behind the best in humanity. Because as I say again and again, when people blame humanity for everything, you don't understand what's going on here. We are the religion of the gods. We are the evolving beings for which there is great hope. And we are under assault. And we need to defend true humanity. And I say it again and again, because the lie is just so thick here, especially in America. In Europe, it's a bit different, but not much better, I would think. I live mainly in England. I didn't live on the continent, but I would assume the entire Western civilization has been Americanized to some terrible degree, and we're all sort of sinking under the weight of it.
You know, it really is interesting you put it that way, because there are people out there that have tracked the physical effects when the CERN Hadron Collider has been turned on regarding the magnetosphere. And it's pretty well established now, so at least potentially a physically dangerous effect on the environment. So can you tell me then, from your perspective, if that's the physical kind of hazard, what is the essence of the occult danger from CERN?
Well, let me just address that magnetosphere. I mean, it went so far as the magnetosphere shut down, remember? It actually shut down for a couple of days.
Yes.
If these, let's just posit the possibility that some very high degree occult knowledgeable scientists and their financial supporters know that the ionosphere and magnetosphere are spiritual bodies around a living planet, just as we have spiritual bodies around our living being. And when we die, that will begin to separate out, and some things will leave and some things will go back to their earth elements. Let's assume they know that. So they're very interested in what tweaking these spiritual bodies do, not just to the planet, but to the people on the planet, to the human being, which they also know is the religion of the gods. And there are very high hopes for a free will being like the human being. And that they are going, thumbing their nose at the gods, or God, however you want to say it. And so they're pushing the envelope as far as they can without completely going extinct here. I often think that that's what's going on at the poles as well, that it's very connected to CERN and the space fence activities, in that we don't want a pole reversal, or maybe some do. But primarily, we don't want a pole reversal, and we're not in the schedule for having one right now. But they're tweaking the poles as well. So you have the buildup of ice for a while in the Antarctica, as they're melting the ice in the Arctic Circle. And at some point, they may start building the ice back up in the Arctic Circle as they melt some down in the Antarctic, as they're trying to keep it within the realm of non-extinction for their experiments. I mean, this is something I do think about, that it's possible.
One quick thing that I can add here is all of the unusual action around Antarctica at the end of last year. You know, they had John Kerry visiting there. They basically had the Russian Pope visiting. Buzz Aldrin, of course, collapsed there. Very unusual activity. So we have a religious figure, a political figure, an astronaut. These are representatives of different aspects of society, all visiting, you know, in this strange procession, including Aldrin.
Well, he was in space. Yeah, he was in space. And, of course, Kerry is the 33rd degree Mason, and who knows what else. And that was the Eastern Pope, the Eastern Church Pope. There is a theory that Atlantis was Antarctica, so that feasibly could have played into this, especially with the Eastern Pope being there. But I can't tell you enough about, I have a whole section on Antarctica in the Space Fence book.
Excellent.
And it's called Operation Deep Freeze. And it very much is about, there's something going on there that is, yes, has to do with keeping the poles at 23.5 degrees or within a couple degrees range. Sometimes I think that all the talk in the newspapers about the 2 degrees for the climate change, that, you know, it's 2 degrees. Well, I often wonder if that's esoteric symbolic language out to the brothers about the 2 degrees that they have to maintain to keep the Earth from having a pole shift. Because now that they're messing with the ionosphere and the magnetosphere, and opening some sort of tunnel or wormhole or whatever you want to call it to antimatter if we're going a little too far, that we could go too far, and then it would be collapsing. And as you know, Daniel, in the Sub Rosa America series, I very much talk about a collapse that happens, a physical collapse and tidal waves, and coastal cities are gone, and America is in a military junta fashion, and there's a great panic going on in 2019. So I do see that the repeat of Atlantis, of the so-called myths of Atlantis, are very possible, and that actually they may, now that we're discovering, I think it's again the Freemasons are now allowing a lot of archaeological discoveries that they've known about for many decades to come. Oh, and we found this. Oh, and we found a technology from 60,000 years ago. You know, that sort of thing.
Right.
I think that that Atlantis may actually have sunk for similar causes and similar technologies. But I have no way to prove it. And truthfully, I don't feel any need to prove it, you know?
Well, I can appreciate that. Certainly there's outstanding evidence for a lost culture if we're willing to look at it. And that's what's interesting about your work, as we've seen in these interviews. You know, you have the kind of fantastic grasp of the scientific facts, but you're aware of a kind of mystical reality informing those scientific findings.
Yes.
So you're really operating on both levels here.
And it's crucial. It's crucial because we're all, we're being barraged by Planet X, Nibiru, the Anunnaki. I mean, not to say that they're not true on some level. They probably are. But if we start with what is, with the technology and the events going on right around us, to me, that's the path of initiation for human beings now, is to really explore what the deeper meaning is in the events that are occurring. Because in a way, the signature of life, it tells us things about our deeper nature and about our deeper purposes, if we're willing to listen.
Well, I think your work shows that you are willing to listen, and that you'll use that scientific knowledge through a kind of spiritual lens to get the best of both worlds and to get a real picture of what's happening and share that with everyone.
Well, you're one of the people too, Daniel. You know that. You're one of the ones too, leading forward, the leading edge.
Well, I appreciate that. I know we can get to deeper levels here for sure. Alana, just terrific having you on for two in-depth episodes on the Space Fence. The book is Under an Ionized Sky, From Chemtrails to Space Fence Lockdown. We can expect it in February 2018. And I know at this point you've completed the book, actually. So now it's all about the publisher getting it out.
And I wish it would come out sooner. So do a lot of other people. But, you know, he did a good job on the last book, Feral House, and I, you know, I'm looking forward to the good job on this one.
Oh, yes, and they publish a number of really intriguing titles there, and this will be really something special. So have a great day over there, Alana, and we'll talk soon.
Great day. Oh, you're always so fun, Dan.
All right. Thank you for joining me for this fascinating episode with Chemtrails author Alana Freeland on CERN, D-Wave AI, and Space Fence Surveillance. You can find more special reports, deep interviews, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.
Sign up for our newsletter at darkjournalist.com to stay updated on the latest shows.